This is KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep, here with local and statewide news. This weekend, the National Guard will begin conducting emergency preparation drills throughout Juneau. The exercise is called Operation Orca. Captain Kyle Rayberg with the National Guard says it's meant to prepare Alaska cities to respond to emergencies of national significance. Those may involve weapons of mass destruction, like chemical, biological, or explosive threats.
It's one of those things in which we hope we never have to respond in full force with this exercise like we're doing, but we can't think that it's not going to happen. So we prepare for the worst possible day in Alaska.
The training is held every other year in different parts of Alaska. This year, the exercise is in Juneau and will take place this Sunday through next Thursday. Rayberg says that means some streets will be closed downtown near the Alaska State Capitol. There will also be activity near the downtown cruise ship docks and the airport. He says the National Guard will put up signs to warn people who might be in those areas. Rayberg says residents can expect to see specialized vehicles and equipment, people in hazmat suits, and increased military aircraft operations. Residents may also hear sirens. It's only a drill, but he says it's extremely important that Juneau is prepared if an emergency like this occurs.
We just want to make sure we're constantly staying on our toes and that we are ready to deploy anywhere in the state, whether it's south, east, or the interior.
The National Guard will coordinate with local, state, tribal, and federal agencies for the exercise. Residents can find more information about the closures and potential impacts of the training by looking at the social media accounts of participating agencies like the Juneau Police Department or the local U.S. Coast Guard sector. A polar icebreaker is destined for what will eventually be its new home port in Juneau. It set out on Tuesday from Pascagoula, Mississippi, on its maiden voyage as an official U.S. Coast Guard vessel, according to a news release. The 360-foot ship is built to operate in the Arctic and is meant to increase U.S. presence in the region. The Coast Guard estimates it will bring hundreds of Coast Guard personnel and their families to Juneau in the coming years. The ship was previously named the Ivic. It was renamed the Storrs in honor of another Coast Guard ship that was stationed in Juneau in the 1950s. The Storrs is intended to serve as a stopgap while the Coast Guard built a new fleet of icebreakers called Polar Security Cutters. It's the first icebreaker the Coast Guard has acquired in more than 25 years. It's not a new ship. The Coast Guard bought it for $125 million from a private entity late last year. Alaska's congressional delegation tucked the funding to purchase it in a spending bill signed by President Joe Biden last year. A ProPublica investigation of the ship published earlier this year found it has a design problem and a history of failure. The Coast Guard announced last summer that Juneau would be the vessel's home port. It's expected to arrive in Juneau this August, but it will leave again to be temporarily berthed in Seattle until the necessary shore infrastructure is finished in Juneau. And the Alaska Board of Education unanimously approved new reading standards for Alaska Native languages Wednesday. This means students from kindergarten to third grade can have their reading skills evaluated in an Alaska Native language instead of in English. The new standards are broader than the state's current reading standards. This allows schools to fit the standards to their cultural and linguistic needs. The standards recognize students can achieve literacy in state languages other than English. Jamie Shanley is the Assistant Director of Education with the Alaska Heritage Institute, a nonprofit tribal organization that helped create the standards last year. She says the standards give students learning an Alaska Native language another option to meet reading requirements set by the Alaska Reads Act. But it was a challenge to create the standards.
That was a really hard clashing of two worlds, a Western ideal of education with this standards-based system and an Indigenous worldview. And so this group really had a beautiful way of meshing those two things.
She says the standards aren't meant to dictate reading in one of the state's 23 official Alaska Native languages in a confined way. The standards also define reading differently. Shken George is one of the owners of Teaching Indigenous Design for Every Student, an education consulting group. She says Alaska Native cultures do read, even if there wasn't historically a written language.
Reading is looking at things and gathering information. And so we really talked a lot about how we have been reading things this whole time, you know. And so we really had these deep discussions about reading the weather and reading our environment and reading our regalia and our art.
There are Alaska Native language programs in schools all around the state, including the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy School in Juneau. Several educators from TCLL helped to form the standards. Principal Molly Yerkes says the school already uses elements of the new standards and that they will help schools take the next steps to develop ways to assess reading in Alaska Native languages.
In Alaska, every community has to develop their own. It's not like something you can buy from Texas and McDougall Littell. So I think this adoption of these standards will support the creation of quality materials.
Yerkes says the TCLL staff are working with researchers to develop assessments for Tlingit learners. Per Alaska Administrative Code, regulations typically take effect 30 days after they are filed by the Lieutenant Governor. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep. And an eagle nest has paused a crucial construction project near downtown Petersburg. The nest was noticed just days after the borough began site work to replace the old wastewater pump station nearby. Public Works Director Chris Cotta says that the construction project was immediately stopped last Thursday. Eagles and their nests are federally protected. That means the department now has to get special permits to keep working in the area. For now, they're allowed to work about 100 yards away from the nest. But Cotta says getting permission to work closer could take months. By then, the eagle could be gone.
We're just doing everything we can to try and keep our project moving forward while staying in compliance with the law. That's the bottom line.
Delaying this construction comes with a catch. Cotta says the pump station desperately needs an upgrade. It's located at Hungry Point. It's the second largest pump station in Petersburg, and Cotta says the role it plays is critical. If this pump station breaks, sewage could flow into yards, out of manholes on Nordic Drive, and into the Wrangell Narrows. The longer the old pump station runs, the more likely it is for something to go wrong.
No, we don't want to keep this aging and failing infrastructure running any longer than we need to because of the possibility for, you know, a breakdown and a potential sewage spill into nearby waters.
Until work near the nest can resume, Cotta says that engineers are rearranging their plans and working on other parts of the project that are farther away. He says their goal is to finish construction before the end of the year and hopes the eagle-related delay is brief. And Joe Mishler has been an emergency responder for more than 40 years, about half of which he spent in Juneau. He's retiring at the end of the month to take care of an aging family member. Mishler has spearheaded a team of mobile response units that address needs that can fall through the cracks, like follow-up medical care, housing support, or substance use treatment. He says the program evolved out of in-home care during the COVID-19 pandemic. The teams can meet people where they are, at home, at the shelter, or on the street. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry met him at his office at the fire station to ask about what he learned and what mobile response units do for the community.
Basically, I oversee all of it. It's kind of like the non-emergency portion of the fire department. Basically, we call it MIH, the Mobile Integrated Healthcare Program. I think part of the reason it's accepted and been as successful as it has is because it's basically needs-driven. We identify needs, we identify from case management, from the hospital, and from the clients we talk to, our patients, and we determine what it is that they need versus saying, hey, we have a program and we're going to put this out onto the community. It's basically grown from the community.
And I think one thing that really stands out about this program is that it's essentially kind of, I think, fills a lot of the gaps that sometimes city services can have, mm-hmm. With a little bit more, like you say, that it's both medical care, social work, and emergency response kind of in the same moment. And I feel like there's not a lot of services that can often like provide exactly that for somebody. And I'm wondering, how has the response been?
Well, the response has been tremendous. Been very well received by the community. We have some clients that we see that there's really no other service for them, but we're continuously getting referrals. We look at why they're using the emergency services and then try to help them solve their problem and make them self-sufficient so that we're not continuously being their resource. So anyhow, there's a lot of the times the resources are already here. People just don't know about them. And you know, the biggest thing is we think that we, as paramedics, save lives. And really, if we would approach it, that's where burnout comes from, because so much of what we do on the ambulance isn't life-saving. But what we really do is we help people. Every crisis is different, but that's what's neat about this program is so often in the ambulance, we simply pick them up, you're not dying, shuffle you to the ER, there you go back out and do it again, do it again, do it again. And here we actually get to try to figure out what's going on, and stop the cycle. We actually try to help people resolve things, you know.
Do you get to see a lot of that, like resolutions for folks?
Yeah, yeah. It's very rewarding work. Since we've started, we've had very, very little turnover. The people really like the job they're doing, meeting the people and developing relationships. And a lot of the people we're taking care of are very seriously ill. Many of them are at the end of life. And so we've had many of our clients over the years, over the last few years, that have passed. And that's difficult.
Are there any moments you've had over the last 40 or so years that really stood out to you of like why this work matters so much, and like stories or people that you've served or worked with that really reinforced why you do what you do?
One of the things that kind of stands out in my mind is over the years that I found out that little things that I've done, they really were, in my mind, no big thing. But to someone else, it was huge. And I've had people thank me for things or come back or even talk about things. But a lot of times it's the little things and just being nice to people and helping them, take care of them when they're having a really, really, really bad day. That probably does as much in helping people as all of the medical training and everything else that we do.
That was EMS manager Joe Mishler speaking with KTOO's Yvonne Crumrie. And in Juneau, it's currently 52 degrees with light rain. And taking a look at the weather going into the rest of the week and into the weekend, we've got more rain and temperatures hovering between the 40s and 50s. This is KTOO. Thanks for listening.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from Mathnasium. Whether students are ahead of the curve or need extra support, Mathnasium's goal is to build confidence through personalized math instruction. Learn more at mathnasium.com.